with a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
I've noticed movement outside of my domicile lately. Normally, I would have explained it as kids trying to mess with me or gang members trying to prove how tough they are. But given the revelations I experienced recently, my opinion is slightly more extraterrestrial. Given the apparent lack of information I was given, I spoke with the mortician who worked the more recent alien events. I asked where this organization came from. She looked at me and explained that the organization has been around for centuries, but the more formal aspects of working together across the globe came from what is referred to as the event. As soon as she spoke, she froze like a statue. I looked around, thinking that aliens had infiltrated this place, but saw nothing. Turning back, she mumbled that she could not discuss this matter further, then left abruptly. I stayed at the meeting point for a while, rereading the original study of the Dogman experiments. This will be a separate case file upload. I would have done it sooner, but I found out about the event. Eventually, I left the meeting point, and as I drove towards my home, my mind was wandering. If the interloper was not a black regalian, I tried to deduce what it could be. Skinwalker was not likely. The vocal mimicry they possess would have been audibly evident by now. Wendigos don't seem to like me. The Jersey Devil, I hope not, but the size sounds to be bigger and slower. Dogman was a possibility, but seems unlikely. Normally, dogs raise their heckles at me, so a dogman would likely attack. The rake hasn't crossed the threshold, so its modus operandi doesn't match. A friend of the Red Room admin I spoke with, that was a slight possibility. He was vocal that I wouldn't get away with this. So far, he was proven wrong. No investigation, no police. So far, anyway. People don't scare me, especially after my personal encounters with cryptids. My phone rang, jolting me out of my meditative contemplation. It was the ex-mortician. He sounded worried. He gave me a rendezvous point and a deadline. I pulled away, and as I left, I saw a crawler emerge from the thigh-high grass right next to my vehicle. 2 hours later, I was at one of the many roadside diners in the continental United States. Weapon and permits were double-checked before I entered. He sat at a booth, his eyes gazing out into a point in the middle distance. He shook his head to bring himself back as I slid in.
"You wish to know more about us?" he asked.
"I've been working with you for a while now, and it seems there have been some important details you've missed out. I think it's time I find out the truth of your organization. Would you care to elaborate?" The diner hostess approached and poured a coffee for us. We nodded in gratitude, and when I met her eyes, I saw that haunted look.
"Skinwalker used to fish for customers every few months. After the 8th victim, we got a hunting party together. They got the cryptid," the former mortician explained plainly.
"Answers that question, then. What is the event?" The flinch was worrying, but I held my ground. Having traveled with this man and the cryptids we have seen, him reacting to anything other than the memory of his last autopsy for such a pronounced reaction, it is concerning.
"You know those creepypastas about Disneyland and missing kids?" he said, with a world-weary sigh. 3 centuries before Disneyland, we found items that could not be easily identified. There were no corpses, no signs of foul play, but the objects were strange. It wasn't until recently that we realized what the items were," he said, more to the table than to myself. "Lanyards, with the names, ages, and addresses of children, as well as a date. But the dates were all after 1958. They are the children that have been or will be going missing from any Disney World or Disneyland amusement park. Every child. He looks at me, with a tear running down his face. The dates when they go missing. The date what's left of them are found. Once we saw the logo for the Walt Disney Company, we knew something was going to happen. Some of our number got hired by the company. They were tireless in their investigation, but it wasn't until 3 years after the first was built that the first body was found, or what was left of her. Bite marks going through her body, but upon closer inspection, there was no splintering or damage to the bones that were chomped through. The cast made of the bites was impossible. Fangs and human teeth all intermingled in the bite. It is also unfathomably large, from what we can calculate. Apart from the fact that large pieces of her are missing, there is no evidence of a bite other than the imprint. The ribs we could get were pristine, other than the fact that the rib cage and most of her spine is missing. No splintering or damage. No evidence of surgery. It is impossible, and you know what we have seen on our jobs. Naturally, the company was able to keep the families of those missing quiet. The methods of morticians are forbidden from discussing. We get the right to examine the remains, but all results have been identical. No extraneous damage, no post-mortem bruising, just dead children and too many questions. Though we do have a hypothesis, or rather, it is more of a philosophical musing. Ever notice how comedians seem to suffer from depression? It is like they carry such a darkness within themselves that they try to bring joy and laughter to others. If this truly is the case, what darkness lurks within the amusement parks run by Walt Disney? We sip our coffee as we ponder a question that seems too impossible to be real. I would love to immediately refute these claims, but with the cryptids I have personally encountered and the cases I have read, I honestly cannot.
Want a party, handsome?
A voice slurs out the front of the diner. I sit up and look around. There are four people that should be here. Myself, the former mortician, the hostess, and the cook. No extra vehicles were here on arrival. No other patrons were here. So who the hell is trying to proposition us?
Want a party, handsome?
The voice repeats, precisely. A shriek forces me into action. The hostess drops the glass pot of coffee and shrieks again. As I stand up, I look outside to see a rotting animal standing up on its hind legs, looking at least 12 feet tall. A skinwalker. Get them out of here, I roar. Its gaze shifts between me and the mortician, who is pushing the hostess towards the back. Another voice can barely be heard. I am not sure, but it sounds like a reply to the skinwalker's hook.
Let's party.
This is the song that never ends. Yes, it goes on and on, my friend. Some people start singing it, not knowing what it was, and they'll never stop singing it forever, just because. This is the song that never ends. I sang softly, while watching the skinwalker out the front. I nodded deliberately at the former mortician who started singing it. He seems to hesitate, like he felt foolish for singing a child's song. Sing the song. These things hunt by fear. The song will distract you, but only if you sing it. Don't stop singing, I tell the hostess slowly. Walking slowly to the serving area, I call to the cook. I want you to join us out here and sing that song, I say, not breaking eye contact.
Let's party,
came the response. The exact response. Drawing my gun, I stepped away from the serving area. I'm going to distract them. You get to his car and leave. They nodded, but kept singing, though the hostess was visibly paler. Pulling out my gun,
I decided to draw upon the experience of the Jersey Devil encounter. I needed to feel fear, and nothing on this planet filled me with more fear than that monster. I pointed the gun directly down and fired. The bullet slammed into my foot, and I felt some of the bones break. Bleeding, lame, and feeling scared. Hopefully the perfect bait for these predators. "Now!" I roar, while shooting out a window near to me, so I can jump out as best as I could. The pain was excruciating, but the presence of the skinwalkers was a very motivating factor. Limping, I made it to the window. As the skinwalker out the front walked over to me, its rotten flesh seems to absorb the light from the diner.
"Let's party,"
came that voice again, as I landed outside and grunted in pain. Fear from the Jersey Devil began to exude from me. I forced myself to move fast, but each step on my wounded foot was like standing on a ball of hot lead. Rapid movement from behind me was my only warning. I dove to the side as the skinwalker charged at me, its foot hitting my injured one. I never felt such agony before. I could hear car doors closing. The second skinwalker was visible now when it crawled through the window. Its rotten meat seems to hang from the bones as it stared towards me. Its grin stretched beyond the realm nature indicated on the head it currently had. Its jaw opened, and I could hear it replicate a scream of terror. I started to run, but the damage to my foot slowed me down. The car engine revved somewhere in the parking lot, and I could hear the tire squeal in protest as the former mortician and hostess raced to safety. Limping as fast as I could, I saw the second skinwalker emerge from the cafe. It was even longer than the first. I briefly considered how my mind would have reacted to these unnatural monstrosities if I hadn't encountered the Leviathan. Something shifts in the atmosphere when my mind brushes against that memory. The predatory beasts pause. They glance at each other, then charge at me. Fear is no longer useful. It has served its purpose. What I need is fury. White, cold fury. I charge at the aberrations and roll under the swiping claws of the closest creature. Pushing off of my wounded foot, I spring up and let the pain fuel me with adrenaline. Fire is a good weapon against the supernatural, and while I cannot throw it, I pray this diner has gas stoves. Screeches that threaten to scratch my eardrums to shreds burst forth from their ravenous maws. Scrambling as they follow, I dive through the serving window, crashing to the ground. I look up and see that the stoves are gas. Clawing my way up, while the skinwalkers stalk towards me, I pull at the stove. With a grunt, I can feel it start to give. Then I almost hit my head on the stove. I turn on the valves, gas hissing away. I grab two knives while I slip my gun into my holster. Control. That word is my anchor. While the pain fills me with adrenaline, one stupid mistake will get me killed. I need to stay in control, but angry enough to give my attacks more power. They stalk a different side of the kitchen island towards me, skilled and trained predatory tactics. I throw one knife at the furthest monster, but the blade doesn't get much purchase against the rotten meat. I back up to the door, and I can see them smiling at me. Patience. Not a common mental trait of monsters. By now, I am almost at the door, and they are blocking my view of the kitchen. I can't run. They will catch me in a heartbeat, or whenever they want to. I can't shoot the oven to trigger a spark, and hopefully, an explosion. But I do see a microwave. I draw and fire three shots. The first misses, the second one connects, and sparks fly from the electric device. I don't hear the third shot due to the explosion and the shrieking. The shockwave throws me through the doorway, and I land on the asphalt. The screeching tires a higher pitch as I roll over and look at the two skinwalkers, who are still standing. And I walk towards me. I force myself up and start to limp into the forest. I can hear them stalk towards me, and I am too sore to continue fighting. Glancing back as I made my way through the forest, I can see their engulfed bodies. A loud crack causes me to flinch. Turning around, I only see one walking, flaming corpse. That too crashes to the ground. A piercing howl seems to actually tear the night sky apart. Then silence returns. I eventually made it to a main road, where I met a strike team dispatched by the morticians. I debriefed them, while they took me to a trusted vet. I apologize for the delayed update, but I have been trying to recover. But my dreams feature those two skinwalkers with heightened prevalence. While recuperating from the self-inflicted gunshot wound, I decided to resume my actual duties as an archivist for the Mortician Network. I noticed an odd assortment of cases spread across multiple cities, each with varying numbers in each location.
Case file. Sewer inhabitant. NYC. Number 01386.
Preliminary details are small due to what was left of the body outside a storm sewer grate on the outskirts of Manhattan. Most of a right hand, bearing telltale signs of tattoos and a tan are the immediate identifying features. No rings adorn the hand, and the fingerprints have turned up nothing on any criminal database. It is likely that this is one of the many missing homeless people in New York City. However, due to lack of a body or location where the victim was last seen, any further detail is currently speculation, unless we ask the entire homeless population if the photograph of this hand looks familiar. Body part was found in 06-02-2010.
Case file. Sewer inhabitants. NYC. Number 0068.
Preliminary details are more substantial, as a large pair of the torso and upper thighs were relatively undamaged when removed from a sewer junction when discovered. Autopsy indicates the presence of claws and sharpened fangs were used to remove the flesh from the bone. Trace amounts of DNA indicate a human variation. DNA mapping indicates that this variant is smaller than the average human. The skin would be scaly, like a lizard, as the creature is cold-blooded. No mappable bone structure, but hardened cartilage is theorized to allow movement. The eyes seems to allow vision in low or no light, with an aversion to powerful light. Clothing remnants indicates that this was a subcontractor for the city. Partial tattoos allowed for easier identification as a reformed gang member. The victim was reported as being missing for approximately 3 weeks in comparison to estimated time of death. Partial data recovery from destroyed cellular phone have the estimated dates and time of death. Vague witness reports indicate heightened noise pollution from the sewer. One witness was walking along the streets on the same day of death, advised that there was no ambient noise from any animals in the area. While motor vehicles could be audibly identified, there were no birds chirping or insect background noise. No other abnormalities were noticed by the witness.
Case file. Sewer inhabitant. Paris. Number 0013.
Mauled body of an urban explorer found outside an entrance to the Parisian sewer system. No traces of DNA despite the evidence of the similar wounds found on other victims killed in sewer systems around the world. Given the likelihood this urban explorer was originally delving into the Paris catacombs, no further investigation is to occur. When I started to look after case files pertaining to the Parisian catacombs, the only comments regarding these were, "Please refer to the hand copies locked away in a safe place." There are over 913 case files with dates going back decades. I will be speaking with the morticians once I have healed up more. The hostess from the bar is seeing one of the therapists who have dealt with those who survived an encounter with the paranormal, as she was traumatized by the situation. A situation I can understand since encountering the Jersey Devil. There was a few camera feeds of maintenance workers going into the sewer systems. Most are like the end to the Blair Witch, the potential to be shocked, but ultimately a giant anticlimax. But one did catch my attention, not from a maintenance worker, but by a wealthy urban explorer who spent a significant amount on his gear, including a wireless transmitter that could penetrate the ground well enough to send the footage to a black box recording device. This included audio as well. I will include a transcription of relevant audio.
Case file. Sewer inhabitant. Detroit. Number 01499.
Bloodstained camera and shattered pieces of head found outside a storm sewer entry point. Camera appears to be a GoPro with aftermarket antenna modifications to allow greater transmission power and clarity. Network tracing allowed investigators to locate a black box setup at the home of a citizen in the socioeconomic bracket of the upper class. Name has been redacted due to the complicated history this family has with the paranormal. Owner of the camera was reported as missing, and the remains were found 3 weeks after the initial complaint. The official answer given to the family is that the child was kidnapped and killed via a red room on the dark web. Footage has been created to illuminate this, should they ever ask to see the footage. The recording was examined and copied to the corresponding case file. Video and audio clip. The initial start is a voiceover of the urban explorer introducing himself with his Urbex handle. He states that he was wanting to explore the storm sewers around Detroit because he believes it was just like the video game series Infamous on the PlayStation consoles. He approaches a large intake and enters. He describes the surprising amount of research he did into this, and he comments on past excursions he conducted. He walks for about 15 minutes before he freezes. Audio.
Did you hear that? Sounds like something was scratching the wall.
Video. The Urbexer looks behind him slowly, the headlights revealing nothing in the corridor behind him. Turning back, he doesn't seem to notice that there is something ahead which draws further into the darkness. Judging by the lack of commentary from the Urbexer, it seems unlikely he did not see the creature. Using the alternate methods that were also being recorded due to the high-quality camera, night vision reveals the presence of 3 short humanoids with very long arms and very short legs. As the Urbexer creeps forward, the 3 creatures move backwards, but the movement seems odd, more fluid than normal. Audio.
Hope I don't run into any mole people down here. A mole person is a derogatory term used to describe people who live underground. Probably better than Morlock from the Time Machine, though.
Video. He explores a little further and arrives at the intersection. Periodic checks of the night vision mode reveals that the sewer inhabitants split up at the intersection. The only likely safe path is for him to return home, but he doesn't seem to be aware. He looks down each corridor, and he is silent again. He seems to be trying to listen for something. Audio. In the distance, water drips. There is no other ambient noise other than the breathing of the Urbexer. Then, there is a high-pitched shriek. Video and audio. The Urbexer swears and charges straight ahead. His panting echoes off the walls around him. He looks back, and in the bouncing headlight, he can see the sewer inhabitants. He turns to face in front of him, but slams into a wall he didn't see. He crashes heavily to the ground. There is no movement from the camera, and I suspect that he knocked himself out. However, the video shows him trying to move, and a soft groan which is drowned out by the scrabbling of claws on the ground. He rolls over to his back and starts to sit up. Video and audio. The inhabitants approach, the light shining off their eyes. The way the arms bend indicates that the arms are cartilage-based, rather than a skeletal system. A swipe from an arm of an inhabitant knocks the lights and camera off the Urbexer's head. Contrary to popular horror tropes, the camera doesn't land in a way that shows the carnage that is audible.
The screams last for approximately 39 minutes before the assumed death of the Urbexer. That camera records for another several hours before powering off. It is unknown how the camera appeared at the entrance where it was located. As I went through the hundreds of cases from around the world, including Russia, which is unusual as they never shared any other case files that I had seen, I became concerned about what these creatures were. Other than man-eaters, their movements, from what I could see, were weirdly fluid, and the skeletal structure, as previously mentioned, seems to be more focused on cartilage than actual bone. The only thing that struck me as off in all of these cases were the ones based in Paris. 5 recorded deaths with autopsies performed on what was left, but there was a disconcerting amount of references to the Parisian catacombs, and very empathic warnings to stay away. Since I got a regular visitor in the form of the retired mortician, I decided to bring it up with him when I next saw him. Closing down my connection to the deep web, I hear a knock on my door. As I answer it, I noticed something very unusual. There is no white noise at all, no hum of electronics or anything like that. As I opened the door, I saw no one, until I turned around. A black regalian stood there, slightly hunched over, and looking directly at me. Seeing the regalian in front of me, I was taken aback. I certainly was not expecting a member of an alien race that does not experiment on humans to be in my home. It stands there like in those movies, waits mainly on one leg, as if peering around a corner, except he is in my hallway. Why are you here? Hello, it said, uncertainly. I repeated the question, and it paused for a moment and said, hello.
I'm sorry,
it said, before I could respond. This put me on the defensive, as these seemed to be the reason for the mush corpses. Having a dialogue, even this unusual, seemed to hold my interest for my health in good standing. Next thing I know, I'm getting flashes in my mind, like someone is somehow psychologically slamming a slideshow into my mind. Trees, but not ones I expected to see. Rainforests, perhaps. Another image. This one is more chaotic. Flashes of movement. Barely there are glimpses of what I believe are faces. More images of something, likely in the woods. Sounds can be heard. Screaming, begging. Mercy is being requested. Whimpering. What can be understated as a migraine decides to set up a blog dancing competition with the global supply of elephants on my brain would cause a quieter noise than the pounding my head is forcing me to endure. I see black regalians standing around, looking over their shoulder, with long coats on. They are smiling, for lack of a better word, though it seems more leering. There is an undercurrent of an emotion that I cannot quite comprehend.
Sorry,
it says again. I still cannot figure out what it is trying to convey. Another flood of images. Half-man monster creatures in bad makeup running around a movie set. Then it clicks. You turned humans into monsters, didn't you? I whisper.
Me? No. Others? Yes.
It stated simply. I can feel a deep sense of violation at this statement. No, not the statement. The complete lack of inflection. It didn't feel bad for what the others did to another race. But then I remembered that I was educated on empathy. Any damage I incurred, regardless of intention, my parents would sit me down and discuss it with me in great detail. My intentions toward the objects or the occasional house pet whose corpse they found. After the 6th cat, I asked why they did this, and they explained that, due to my lack of emotions, they come to understand that I do not understand the emotional impact of my actions. They told me how other people would view my actions and see me as a monster.
While my intention was never to commit harm to another person, when the cat annoyed me too much, I would kill it. Perhaps this alien is like me. No emotional awareness. While parts of me still burned at the thought of their actions, I decided to understand the intent. Why? I asked. What would cause you to turn the humans you get into monsters? Images flooded my mind, but these were very familiar. It was Sid's bedroom in Toy Story. The focus was on Sid causing harm to the toys with malicious glee. And then they see him put them back together in ways he found entertaining. We are mere playthings to them. Toys to pull apart and pull back together however they want. Bile rises in my throat, and I force it back down. That ember of rage was roaring into an inferno. I wanted to slam my fists into that regalian over and over again, until I turned into a black smear on my carpet. When I stood up, after the visions drove me to my knees, it took a step back. It recognized the danger it was in. Its hands were lifted slightly, like a person would do to try and placate a predator. Then, the emotions were gone. You're going to tell us how many you turned, and into what. Then you will tell us why you made contact with me, I declared in a whisper. My phone rang. I answered it. The ex-mortician greeted me and wanted to visit. Now would be a perfect time. Then bring a voice recorder. There's a conversation we need to have, I say, my eyes fixed on the regalian. The rage hadn't truly dissipated, but it wasn't trying to overtake my conscious action. What human foods can you consume safely?
Not French toast,
it said, while giving me an image of French toast in my head. Any human liquids?
Water.
You seem to be aware of some societal protocols. I expect you will be following along, as it is not a direct violation of your own, I said, as I walked to the kitchen. 25 minutes later, I had finished making the French toast and was carrying it to the black regalian and the stunned ex-mortician who were at my dining table. The recorder was turned on, and we started our meal.
What monsters did you create?
The ex-mortician asked, his eyes glancing to me once to see if he had permission to speak.
Vampire, Therian, Arachne, Minotaur, Satyr. Animal-headed human from place with lots of sand. Others, mainly humanish ones. Others were too difficult and dead.
Arachne, from ancient Greek lore. You turned a human woman into a spider.
Woman with no limbs. Broken toy when we found her. Gave her twice as many limbs. Removed tongue to stop loud noises.
The ex-mortician and I froze in shock at this.
Not much left to do to finish,
it said, simply.
Why?
The ex-mortician asked. I closed my eyes and explained my conversation with my guest before he called. The ex-mortician started to shake with rage. I glared at him and told him to calm down. He started to yell at me when I pointed out two obvious facts. The first fact was that the Black Regalian has taken the time to study our culture more to facilitate communications to confess the actions of his people. The second fact was he clearly wanted to warn us about something, because there would be no other reason for him to break into my house for no reason.
Why are you here? Why have you come to me?
As I tried to understand the emotions and the inflections people use to express them, there are things you notice. That pause before someone drops a huge truth that would shake the worldview of the listeners. I'm not sure if it's learned behavior the regalian picked up on during its consumption of media, or if it performed it instinctively.
You came to warn us. Your people are trying to, what, enslave humanity?
No, not enslave, so much as to change us into the monsters of our fiction, because you think it would be fun? I asked, my mouth slightly agape. It looks at me, then nods.
They were going to release the one you don't know about against you all. You likely wouldn't live too long.
I can't help, I said, after a long pause. I had considered it, but given my recent injury and the archiving still ahead of me, it would be irresponsible for me to go. You need a warrior, not a soldier, but a natural-born warrior. If you can find one who would be suitable, I will help you convince them. But this is not my war. I've been dragged into the cryptids native to this planet. It walks out of the lounge and into the hallway, closing the door behind it. I walk to the door and pull it open, revealing the hallway it had stepped into, and nothing else. The ex-mortician steps up next to me, and mutters in surprise that the regalian is no longer there. I let the door swing close, and step away.
You really going to do nothing?
He asks softly. I've already explained why I'm not the right choice. I'm not going to repeat myself, I answered calmly. Sitting at my small dining table, I wonder how it knew how to find me. The ex-mortician walked over. Carefully, he watched me as I just sat there for a few minutes. So, did you come over for a reason in particular?
Look, you injured yourself to lure those skinwalkers away. I just wanted to make sure you were okay.
I will be fine. I was just going to archive some more cases. Hopefully have a little less action in my life for a while, I said as I grabbed my laptop, coffee, and a few other implements.
What case files are you going to be looking at this time?
The ex-mortician called out. Mimics, or suspected mimics.
Oh, that can be messy.
Case file. Mimic confirmed. Elevator. Tokyo, Japan.
In the month of November, a confirmed mimic was located in an apartment building in Tokyo, Japan. The case that brought this to the attention of the network was the 11th confirmed missing person involving a tenant at this building. A young male, age 24 years old, was seen entering the elevator, and he was not seen since. An investigating officer noted the other missing people and spoke his intentions to a private investigator known to investigate the unusual. This PI is a known network operative. He was about to get the suspected elevator shut down for a period of 3 days under the guise of maintenance. The first day was spent on research and tracking down the footage involving the other victims. He was able to locate the corresponding shaft. On the second day, he confirmed the presence of a mimic copying an elevator car. Since the mimic had recently fed, it wasn't active in its consumption. However, as the PI suspected a mimic's involvement, he was able to quickly confirm it. That night, he used an accelerant infused with metallic shards and a lighter to remove the mimic seed. He then entered the shaft and killed the mimic nest, which was located at the top of the elevator shaft. The damage caused to the actual elevator engine at the top was approximately 20 million yen. The corpses were never recovered.
Case file. Mimic confirmed. Escalator, Colorado, USA.
At an abandoned shopping mall located in the state of Colorado, urban explorers were searching through the complex. One had split off from the group and was walking along an escalator. The attached video footage, located on the mortician's network, showed what happened. The young explorer was walking along until they reached about one-third of the way along. Suddenly, they ceased walking, though it was evidence that they were trying to move. As they looked around, they started to resume a forward motion as if the escalator was working again. When they noticed the unusual activity, they looked ahead at what appeared to be a mouth that looked like the combination of a sarlacc from the Star Wars setting and a Venus flytrap. The explorer started yelling loudly, but none of the others seemed to notice. The explorer was consumed slowly. While the death was a tragedy, there were two things of note regarding this case. The complex had no active utilities at all, so how the security camera was working is relatively unknown. Also, 5 hours after the explorer vanished, the mall was burned to the ground. Police and fire service were unable to locate anything related to arson or anything that could cause the mall to be burned to ash. This part of the case file is still active.
Case file. Mimic. Suspected. Elevator. China.
This information was smuggled out of mainland China by an operative who passed away shortly after delivery. 300 video clips were on the thumb drive, all of them almost identical in footage. A different person was seen in each video file, but they were all the only one on a seemingly malfunctioning elevator, and they all got stuck, and through machinations that are unknown, all of their heads were removed violently. Accompanying text files indicated that there was never any blood or bodies found in any of the kill sites. Given the strict information control the Chinese government has over the people, there is no way we can communicate with our network resources over there, as they are still hunting for the network in the deep web. There is a smaller text file, which indicates that mimics might be evolving to more mobile forms. Abandoned cars on the side of the road seemed to be a common suspicion of mimics. Also, theories or suspicions that they are working with other cryptids. After disconnecting my laptop from the deep web, I stand up and stretch. There was a lot of information to go through, and sitting hunched over my computer took a toll. As I finished my stretch, I noticed something concerning. Shadows seemed to be darker. Light in general seems to be slowly fading away. Grabbing my pistol, I carefully made my way until I discover the problem. The ex-mortician sits next to a cryptid that I never expected to see. Sitting there, like a gangly lupine, the rake sits there. Its pale skin almost seems to glow. Its empty eyes stare at me, and I hear a scratchy voice speak in my mind.
Threat.
I aim my weapon at the cryptid when the ex-mortician shakes his head.
He's my friend. He is the rake.
He struggles to speak, like his words are escaping quicksand. What brings you here? I ask.
Help.
It replies, verbally.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.